Hey, this is Evan Longoria of your San Francisco Giants, and you're listening to TortureCast.
You're listening to a podcast by and for fans of the three-time world champion, San Francisco Giants. Let's go, Giants! With hosts Chad King and Eric Nathanson. This is TortureCast.
It's Tuesday, September 8th, 2020, and this is episode 206 of The TortureCast, the podcast by and for fans of the suddenly playoff scenario building San Francisco Giants. And joining me to talk about the good news from the week is Eric Nathanson from Smoky, Nevada. Man, it's smoky here too. I don't know what's going on. I mean, California's just burning down. Doesn't matter. You even have gender reveal parties and, you know, shit goes sideways, so...
Apparently that seems to be the thing people shouldn't do is gender reveal parties. So if you've done one in the past, you know, just thank your lucky stars. You made it through safe without any injuries. But it's weird having the haze because California and everything's blowing over here to Nevada right now. It's weird. But I'm glad to be talking about playoff possibility Giants baseball. I'm going to use something you said last week and flip it back on you. Last week you said it. If you had told me we were talking about the Giants contending for a playoff spot on September 1st, I would have been like, that's awesome. That's great. Yep. Here we are. They're in the playoff scenarios right now. And there's... what is there, 18 games left in the season? Like, is the actual home stretch. We got 3 weeks of baseball left, and the Giants are interesting. I don't think we could ask for much more right now from them.
No, I mean, it looks like they're going to be relevant at least until, you know, the last week of the season at this point, even if they have a couple of bad weeks. But the Giants have officially resurrected themselves to a 500 record, which is just remarkable considering that they were 8-16 at one point during the year. And now they're 21-21. As you note here, Eric, they've won 13 out of their last 18. So that's kind of a funny number because they have 18 left, right? So the previous 18, they had 13 wins and only 5 losses. I mean, obviously, if they continue at that pace, they'll be the number 5 seed or something, you know, maybe even better than that. They may even eclipse the Padres. But that's actually really important because they do play the Padres a heck of a lot during these last 18 games. And that's going to say a lot into figuring out what the Giants are going to do. But, I mean, Jesus, you know, if they started the season 13-5, we'd be like, let's get the division, baby.
Exactly. So I feel like they're running away with things. And now that's a good way to put it in perspective, too, because San Diego actually has 17 games left. So if you imagine that they only win, like, 5 of those games, the Giants could catch them for second place in the division.
And they could. You know, they can kind of control their own destiny, certainly for the playoffs, but they could sneak in. But that just, you know, I'll pump the brakes on that. The Padres are really good this year. And so, you know, I just hope they play 500 against them. But they are currently third place in the NL West, 9 games back of the Dodgers, which, whatever, Dodgers are like the best team in baseball right now, whatever. And they currently hold the 7th seed in the NL playoffs. Now, them and the Marlins are virtually tied. But they have some sort of tiebreaker, or maybe the fact that they played more games. Because the Marlins are also a 500 at 18-18. They've just played 6 fewer games than the Giants. And currently they would face the Braves right now, who hold that number 2 spot. Now, this would be interesting because it does look like that number 8 spot is going to face the Dodgers almost to a certainty. I don't think anyone's catching the Dodgers for the number 1 seed. And so that's really interesting because I think from a Giants fan perspective, I mean, you don't want to face the Dodgers because they are such a good team. But at the same time, we're their rivals. And that would be just, there'd be something so, I don't know, schadenfreude about it, wouldn't it? I mean, if they went into Chavez Ravine and took 2 out of 3 games there and moved on and bounced the Dodgers from the playoffs, I mean, that would just be, you know, sprinkle in a Kershaw choke into there too.
For Giants fans and just the rivalry in general, it's like the perfect fit of what should happen. But I'm kind of now leaning towards the idea of what if the Giants shoot their way up to the 4 or 5 seed and then they get to play the Dodgers in the second round, just so we get pictures of Dodgers Giants postseason baseball at Oracle.
Yeah.
But I'm with you. There's way more fun in them being the 8th seed and going to Dodger Stadium You know, because we talked about it last week or two weeks ago. They finished 4-6 against the Dodgers. They are not scared of the Dodgers.
No.
So if they went in there, they'd be loose as can be, and they would totally have the shot. That's why this team's already so fun and interesting, because they totally know they're playing with nothing to lose. Yeah. Everything seems like house money at this point. So that would be the ultimate. Even if the Giants were to lose in the next round, we'd all be totally okay with that, because I mean, we get to hold 1988 over the Dodgers fans. You know, we'd then get to hold that. I interact with a lot of Dodgers fans on a regular. I know you interact with Dodgers fans, and sometimes that's the most fun part of this rivalry, is just being able to hold a little something over each other.
Yeah, I playing with house money is a perfect way to put this. If the Giants were to get the 7th or 8th seed, I mean, let's take a poker analogy, right? I mean, you get a free entry into the World Series of Poker. It's like, whatever, you get bumped out in the first round, you're not going to cry about it, right? I mean, you're going to be disappointed, but you're not going to cry about it. If the Giants go in and face the Dodgers or the Braves or whomever, hell, they're just happy to be in the tournament, you know? And if they get bounced, they get bounced. They're not an elite playoff team. We know they're not, right? I think they're proving to be better than we originally thought they were at the beginning of the season. And those are some really good signs for the years to come, that maybe Farhan kind of knows what he's doing. And, you know, he's proven it with the A's and the Dodgers, and now he's starting to prove it with the Giants. So, I mean, if they make the playoffs and get bounced, I'm not going to cry over it. It's not going to feel like 2002. It's not going to feel like 2016 against the Cubs. I mean, it'll just be like, well, they had a shot and, you know, the better team probably won. But what if, you know, crazy shit happens? And, you know, any team going into that tournament, even the worst team in baseball, I mean, you could take the Pirates, and they still could take 2 out of 3. So that's the beauty of it. And to be honest, this is the year not to be a number one seed, as far as I'm concerned, because it's so dangerous. You know, normally that first seed, you at least have 5 games. You have a little bit of a buffer to make a mistake or two. In a 3-game series, man, I mean, you Kershaw chokes game one, and now you got to win the next two. And you're the best team in baseball. So
it's going to be managed, those 3-game series, in a very different way than any postseason series has. I mean, I know there's always a sense of urgency, but it's almost like the wild card game on steroids, because these managers are going to be playing to win each game. I can't imagine that a manager is going to throw in the towel unless they're losing like 10-1, 11-1, and be like, okay, well, you know what, this one is done. I think any time a team is within 4 runs, they're going to throw everything at the kitchen sink during that series, because you need to. You just need to get past those 3 games. And you don't want to be remembered as that number one seed. Everybody will remember when the 16 beats the 1, you know, in college basketball. It'll be very similar in baseball this year if that happens. And thankfully, we don't have to worry about that as Giants fans. You know, we can only be the team knocking off the number one seed instead of getting knocked off.
Yeah, we're not going to get knocked off. And just to take another little aside, I was thinking about how we already know how weird it's been to watch baseball without fans in the stands. But, you know, they're regular season games. They win. They do a little high five. They do a little socially distant, you know, celebration, and kind of just go in the dugout in the clubhouse and take care of business. I can't imagine what these celebrations are going to look like in the postseason, especially the league championship and the World Series. Whoever wins, I mean, there's not going to be any crowd. It's going to be the strangest scene. You're going to hear all them whooping and hollering and probably saying, you know, dropping F-bombs.
Yes. It's going to be one long mute button for like, you know, a minute and a half after everybody wins, and the cameras are on the field with them celebrating, just because there's going to be so many. Yeah, we buttoned it in. Yeah. Oh, gosh.
But I was just kind of like, it's a little sad. It's just like, weird. You know, the home fans aren't going to be there to enjoy it. But
God, that's not something to think about.
It's what we got.
Wow.
I know. It's very odd. No matter who's in the World Series, right? I mean, we're coming up on, you know, 6 weeks away, 7 weeks away from kind of that scenario happening. All right. Well, let's talk about the week that was, Eric. I mean, it was a good week. They went 4-2. And, you know, to be honest, those 2 games were frustrating, right? And they're gonna have their stinkers. They're going to have the ones that they let get away. I get it. But let's start out the week with Tuesday, of course. We recorded last Monday. They absolutely demolished the Rockies in Colorado. Not surprising you get a higher scoring game, but it did tie the Giants franchise records for runs and hits in a game. And, of course, yeah, the highlight was Alex Dickerson with 3 bombs, two doubles, 16 total bases, which is now a Giants record. And that last double he hit, Eric, I mean, they said would have been a home run in 29 out of the 30 parks.
And, yeah. That... and the one park that it wasn't is where they were playing.
The one park, yeah. But here's an audio highlight of Dickerson's third home run when the Giants were already cruising 13-2.
Dickerson goes the other way, hit well. It is out of here. He's got a three-homer game. He's got three more RBIs, and it's now 16-2. Have a night.
Wow. Have a night indeed, Alex Dickerson. And, of course, you had some other teammates who jumped in there as well. So you had three different Giants with six RBI with Cron Solano. I mean, I never even heard of that before, Eric. That was crazy.
That was the most ridiculous, like, drubbing we've ever seen. And it just, like, happened so fast because Crawford hit a three-run homer. In the same inning, Dickerson hit that three-run homer. Mm-hmm. So they were up, like, 9-2, I believe, heading into that inning. And then all of a sudden, bing, bang, boom, it was 16-2, and this game was in the books. And it was just like, can Dickerson hit a fourth home run? And he had two shots at it. He walked in the eighth. And then he hit that double that you mentioned in the ninth, and I really thought he would. And that was the only inning in the ninth that the Giants didn't score. They had the chance to become the fourth or fifth team to score in every single inning in a baseball game. Ironically, the Rockies were the last team to do it about 20-something years ago. And the one inning they didn't score was when Colorado put a position player on the mound.
That's the irony of it.
Baseball is the greatest sport in the world, if not for things like that. I mean, that just doesn't happen in any other sport. That's the waggiest kind of thing. So you mean a guy who doesn't make his living pitching was the only guy to get this team out? Yup.
Yup.
Oh, I don't get it. No, you don't. Nobody does.
No one does. I mean, that happened this year with the Giants, right? When Tyler Heineman went out there and threw up a scoreless inning. It's not that balls weren't hit hard. He gave up that double to Dickerson, which would have been a home run almost anywhere else. Or if he had pulled it slightly, it would have been a home run. But, I mean, hey, look, you know, it was fun to see that. That was, and you note here in the show notes that their run differential was a minus 19 before the game began, and they finished the night at minus one. They almost erased that entire deficit.
It was so in one close. Night.
Yeah. And as of right now, they are 21-21 and they are zero run differential and their expected win loss is 21-21. So the Giants are performing kind of exactly right at the average of Major League Baseball right now. So they're kind of the model for mediocrity.
I'll take it though.
But it's good enough to get in the playoffs, right? So
I will. We were talking about this, and this game is a perfect example of the offense that the Giants have rolled out there lately. I mean, everybody was hot. Belt had three hits that game. Crawford's homer was a moonshot. Yaz hit a triple, I believe it was, that was almost gone. Maybe that one was a double. I'm not sure about it. But again, everybody was getting on base. Everybody was getting hits. Bart contributed. I think he had a three-hit game that day. Like, up and down the lineup. And that's why the Giants are dangerous. And that's kind of why, like, even if the Giants win the World Series this year, there's no way, you know, just as a case in scenario, there's no way Farhan's just going to keep the team because this team won it all. We know already that this team is fluid and is going to change going forward. And we're totally okay with that. Like, anything that happens, we have to trust the process.
Yeah,
and
we do.
On days like this, the offense shows us that the process is starting to work. I mean, look at the guys that are doing damage. Dickerson, Yastrzemski, guys that they brought in.
No, I mean, you know, Dickerson obviously had a hot start last year. He came, you know, to the team in July and propelled them on that incredible winning clip that got him back into the playoff hunt, which also probably, you know, gave Farhan the reason to not trade Bumgarner or Will Smith before the trade deadline. So that's the irony of it. I wonder what would have happened otherwise. But Dickerson's obviously showing some flashes again with his three home run game, but overall he's been really hot. Solano, who's a veteran, he's just come out of almost nowhere this year. Yeah. And I'm not sure entirely the reason why. And he's hitting, you know, whatever, 340 right now. I mean, he's just hot. And for a guy who doesn't hit too many home runs, he's hitting home runs at the right time. I know that. He's been pretty remarkable. So, you know, a lot of the, and of course, Yaz, you know, he definitely saw something in Yaz in terms of his on-base percentage and his ability to select good pitches to hit, strikes to hit, not going for the balls, not going for marginal strikes. So these things do make sense. That's also why he likes Belt, despite how much Giants fans rag on him and how inconsistent he is. He's been relatively healthy this year, and, you know, he's hitting .330 for the moment. So can't complain about some of the production of the Giants. I don't have the tweet in front of me. I'll find it for the show notes. But it was before yesterday's game. Someone had posted the Giants' batting average, runs scored, RBIs, extra base hits, and home runs at this same point last year after 40 games or 41 games. And it was remarkable how much higher all of those categories are right now. So the Giants are markedly improved from last year in terms of offense. Just unfortunately, pitching's not quite as good. So,
well, I mean, it's not bad. You noted it.
But it's not bad.
We're about to go through the two losses, and we're about to discuss how the Giants could have won both games. And not in unrealistic fans grasping at straws standpoint, the Giants legit could have won Thursday's loss in Colorado, and then Thursday's loss in Colorado, and then Friday's game against Arizona. You know, Thursday, when they lost, after scoring 23 runs, they started out, you know, we had another text thread going the next day. They scored 4 runs in the first inning, and we're like, holy crap, you know, look at this. Who are these guys? They're going to just absolutely – they're exercising all the Coors Field demons that the Giants have ever had. And then they got to 6 runs, and they stopped. And then the bullpen finally imploded. So, like, when you finally have that moment where the offense stops hitting – and then the bullpen gives up a few runs. You see what happens, and that's why they lost that game 9-6. And Kevin Pillar got to come back and bite his old team in the butt.
Yeah.
After looking foolish on 2 Tyler Rogers pitches, he looked foolish. He's just so eager to swing the bat. There's no way Rogers should have thrown him something in the freaking strike zone. And Pillar knocked it to the gap. It gave the Rockies the lead, and then home run gave them the bigger lead, and they lost it. And after the 23-run game, we were feeling good. Giants are going to sweep. You know, they're going to be at 500. We thought they'd be at 500 that day, and they totally blew it, and they came back home, you know, 2 games under 500, and we were looking at the Arizona series and saying, well, hopefully the Giants can do something here.
Yeah, you're right. I mean, look, every team is going to lose game like this, several games like this a year, so it's going to happen. This is so far, right at 500 team. So you're going to have a lot of these along with the wins. But it is one of those games, despite it being in Colorado where runs come just like that, they did have a 5-run lead, you know, going into the fifth inning, still a 4-run lead going into the sixth inning. And so that's where it does get a little frustrating, that the bullpen just couldn't hold it and the offense couldn't tack on, because they had those 6 runs by the fourth inning. Like you said, 4 runs in the first, they tacked on in the third and the fourth. And it was that big seventh inning where the Rocks scored 5 runs with that Kevin Pillar hit that broke the tie, unfortunately, or gave them the lead, I should say. But yeah, they go into Arizona, and they've played Arizona very, very well this year. And again, it was another game that they could have won. And talk about, and this isn't necessarily about the bullpen blowing it, this is about not cashing in on opportunities the Giants had to score. And it wasn't just the highlight with that boneheaded play that Dubon made, but they basically loaded the bases in this inning. And I don't know, you want to say what happened, because he's a kid and things happen. But
there was a fly ball in the outfield, but it was medium depth and it was to right field. So it was Cole Calhoun, who has the strongest arm in Arizona's outfield. Mm-hmm. Granted, Steven Duggar was on third base. And so Dubon at second base was just watching the runner in front of him and following what he did. If that guy tagged, he was going to tag, because the throw is coming from right field. The throw to third base is the farthest throw for that guy on the diamond.
Yep.
So that is a sensible move, tagging up on a fly ball to right field, but you need the fly ball to be at least medium deep to deep, as opposed to medium shallow like it was. And Calhoun has an arm. And Duggar broke for home, and he just bluffed it. He didn't try to score on the sac fly. And Doobie saw Duggar break for home, and he just put his head down and started running. And then when he put his head back up after getting about a third of the way to third base, he realized, oh, crap,
I'm naked.
I have to get back to second base. And by the time he was able to get back to second base, he was too late, and he was actually called out for being out of the baseline. But I do believe he got tagged as well by the Diamondbacks. which is ironic because I think, no, they couldn't have just stepped on the base. It wasn't. But it totally blew the game. So instead of the bases loaded with one out and another opportunity to push that run across, the Giants were then at first and third with two outs, and obviously they did not score, and they didn't score in the next inning, and they lost by the 6-5 final. Yeah. So just one run would have tied it, at least extended the game, and anything could have happened. So it was back-to-back losses where it felt like the Giants had opportunities. That's all I could think with the Friday game was opportunities, like you said.
Yeah.
There was multiple times they left runners out there where they had a chance, and it just didn't come through, but that's going to happen. You know, it's baseball. I hate to use that as the, like, fallback, but I mean, they're 13-5 in their last 18 games. They had to lose five games somewhere.
Yeah, you know, and two in a row, which in semi-painful fashion, but they got right back on the winning horse, not to use the analogy, but we had an old friend return to Oracle Park off of the DL, and it was funny because I think because of his return and because of the fact that Giants had just lost two in a row in kind of, you know, frustrating fashion, a lot of people were like, you know, predicting the headline, Bumgarner returns to no hit his former teammates. Bumgarner returns to shut him out. Like, Bumgarner gets a special pinch hit and hits a home run or something. Like, we were just waiting for that to happen. And, man, yeah, I was glued to the TV just to see the beginning. You know, I watched the first three or four innings of the game, and I know we've seen him this year in the Diamondbacks uniform, so it's not that it was weird seeing him in the uniform, but seeing him on that bump in the Diamondbacks uniform, pitching to John, I just tore at the heartstrings, man. It was a very conflicted feeling. I don't know. It was odd because obviously, you know, they were talking to Hank Schulman the other day on KNBR, and they were trying to compare the feeling of his departure for Giants fans amongst anything in the recent past. And there really isn't anything as far back as maybe Will Clark. But he even said, Hank was like, yeah, that could be partially true, but Will Clark didn't help win three World Series. He didn't put the team on his back. He doesn't have that legendary performance. He has some great playoff performances and, you know, close MVP kind of years. But again, for what Madison Bumgarner did for this team for so long, for three World Series, for just everything he represents, it really is one of probably the toughest departures that I can remember as a Giants fan. And to see him come back to Oracle was a little rough. But I don't know, what kind of feelings were spinning through your head?
Well, I hate to sound like a cold-hearted son of a bitch here. But
that's what you're here to do, Eric. That's fine.
Yeah, that's I'm okay with it. But I had the emotions of, you know, that's our Bumgarner. He's now pitching for the other team. And then he started pitching, and my first thought was, okay, I'm glad he's pitching for the other team.
Yeah.
Because I don't think Bumgarner has it anymore. I know he was injured this year, but from everything I've seen from him and what he's shown us for the last couple of years, I just don't think he has it anymore. I think he hit his peak. I think 2014 might have been his peak, his prime. You know, he started out young. He was 11 years at the major league level with the Giants organization. He came up as a 21-year-old, and he pitched in the World Series as a 21-year-old. There are very few guys that can say that. Yeah. And then he went on to do it again as 23 and a 25-year-old. So then the 2014 year that he carried them, he was 25. That was his peak. He's on the downside now. And if he doesn't adjust what kind of pitcher he is, he's going to flame out. And he's not going to be pitching at the major league level anymore. So as the cold-hearted son of a bitch that I am, it was not hard to watch him throwing. It actually delighted me to know that his name was getting him the recognition to keep throwing pitches, because I don't think he has much. His breaking stuff doesn't move. Yeah, he snaps off a curveball every now and then. It looks like the old bomb. But he missed his spot so much.
That's the key right there, Eric. So as I'm watching him pitch, obviously one thing I was watching for was velocity, right? And obviously I was conflicted in the sense of I just don't like seeing him on the mound in Oracle Park. It just doesn't feel right. But obviously I still wanted to beat the Diamondbacks. I just wanted to do it in a way that wouldn't like destroy his stats or expose his flaws, because I'm rooting for the guy personally. And what he's done prior to the start was really sad, right? I mean, fastballs were 86, 87, not 89 to 92, right? His curveball was not very snappy. He was missing spots, but then, of course, he goes on the DL. It's a back issue. So it's like, okay, maybe that's all it was. I'm hoping that he comes back to some level of Bumgarner-like, right? As long as it's not beating the Giants. Like, right. if he gave up 500 runs, I'm fine with that. I just didn't want to see him tattooed personally. I'd still want the Giants to win, but in a weird format. But I agree with you. Even before the auto highlight I'm about to play, he clearly was not hitting his spots. You saw a catcher lining up, and he was off by 1 to 2 feet consistently. Yes. It wasn't even like
the glove was drifted every single pitch.
Yeah, he was not hitting his spots. His velocity was slightly up, but it still wasn't what he was even just last year or a couple years ago. But Arizona still snuck a run here in the first inning on nobody out and took a 1-0 lead into this bottom of the second. And then you had two Giants step up to the plate, and well, this is Bumgarner's been his problem this year.
There's one ball and one strike with Darren Ruff on deck. Swinging a high fly ball to left. Peralta back, looking up, out of here. And this game is tied.
And that first one by Longo was no cheapie. He knew it was gone. Bumgarner knew it was gone.
Home run number 5 for Longoria.
And then you had Darren Ruff.
Ruff drives one to center field. Varsho back, looking up, out of here. And the Giants take the lead. Wow.
Wow.
Yeah, you hear Krug going, or Kipe going, wow. That thing was 453 feet, and it was to the back of the netting covering the patio garden in dead center field. I mean, that's big boy territory. It was a
laser beam too. It wasn't like a towering majestic shot. That thing like barely got off the ground. I was shocked that there was no hole in the netting and smoke coming off it, because that thing was hit so hard. Bumgarner, he turned around at the moment it was hit. He gave the damn it. I knew I did it again, because he knew he was missing his spots.
Oh, he knew. Yeah.
It continued throughout the, you know, his entire start. It was tough to watch. That's what really, it was great that he was pitching for the other team, but it was tough to watch. So like you, I was happy that it was only a couple solo shots, and then they extended the lead later in the game against mm-hmm. other pitchers. No offense to Bumgarner getting the loss. It would have been cool if he didn't have to get saddled with the loss, but honestly, he deserved it for giving up those two home runs and not pitching that well. The Giants really should have scored 5 or 6 runs off Bumgarner. They just were swinging at some of the wrong pitches. Joey Bart was very anxious at the plate because, you know, he wanted to do something against the old franchise guy. And, Wilmer hit the ball hard. There was other guys who definitely had shots at doing stuff, but didn't to Bumgarner. And if they face him again next year, if he hasn't fixed his things, there's a chance the Giants could tee off on him. It's a shame to see it. And I'm just very glad the Giants won Bumgarner's return instead of losing Bumgarner's return. And he didn't dominate them. They don't look like the Patsies right now. The Giants actually look really, really good coming out of this.
And it was one of those things where he didn't get, quote, crushed by the Giants. His stat line is 4 innings, 3 hits. 2 of them, of course, were bombs. 2 earned runs. Those are the only 2 runs he gave up. 2 walks, 2 strikeouts. It's not the worst stat line in the world. He did lower his ERA to 8.44.
Wow.
Great. And he's 0-4 on the year. But it really was – the Giants absolutely could have scored more runs off him. I agree with you. They had running – runners in scoring position situations. They just didn't get the hit at those big times. They could have really run up a crooked number on Bumgarner. So it wasn't the worst thing for Bum. Giants still get the win. But again, seeing his velocity and missing the spots, I mean, you and I are used to watching – all Giants fans are used to watching him most of the time, especially in the playoffs. I mean, just Posey puts it down, boom, he hits it. Posey puts it over here, boom, he hits it. It's just – he doesn't miss. And right now, he's wandering. He's all over the board. And I do agree.
His biggest miss was on that he likes to bust fastballs inside or throw a tight curveball at your fists to a right-handed hitter. Mm-hmm. And every fastball he tried to bust inside to a right-handed hitter – drifted back out over the plate. So he's not finishing his pitches the same way he used to. So I don't know if it's mechanical or, like I said, he's just on the downside. Yeah. But, it did. It made them look good. And thankfully, it didn't make him look like a fool at all, because it was nice for the Giants to get back winning again after 2 frustrating losses. They were able to hold on. I believe they gave up a run in the 9th. I think that was a theme this weekend, was giving up a run late to the Diamondbacks. But they were still able to hold on. I don't remember. Was that wasn't Coonrod's night?
Yeah, it was a one in the seventh. They gave it one in the seventh and one in the eighth. They didn't give up any in the ninth, but still, yeah, they had a 4-1 lead, and then started to get a little hairy there. But Watson came out for the save. So the last inning, he was, had a perfect ninth, which is great. And that's, by the way, the first save he's had all year, which I found, again, at the beginning of the year, I even drafted Watson on my fantasy team because I thought he was the guy that was going to be best suited for saves.
One of the nice things, too, at the end of the Bumgarner game was Dubon had the boneheaded play the night before by getting caught off second base. And in the sixth, he and Joey Bart, who are hopefully part of the future, they had back-to-back triples. Doobie drove – I don't remember who he drove in. Maybe it was Dickerson or somebody. And then Bart drove in Dubon with his own triple. And that's why they were able to hold on 4-3 because, you know, like we said, it got tight at the end. And then you know, it was a good start because it started a 3-game winning streak. Because Sunday, you know, it's Cueto Day. Dia de Cueto, we always figure, okay, you know, the Giants, it's not that we figure Cueto Days are a win. It's not like a Timmy Day back in the day.
No.
But not quite. We know when Cueto takes the mound, the Giants have a chance to win the game every single time out. And once again, Cueto, he was kind of rocky, but he fought through some things. In the fifth, when he got a strikeout, I don't remember who it was he struck out, but he got a strikeout to end the inning. He walked off. I'm sure he was cursing. He was saying things. He was like, it was the fourth. He was saying things, you know, cheering more animated than we've seen Cueto in the past. Mm-hmm. But he only threw, what, 4 2/3 inning, and Berger came in to vulture the win after Solano hit his big home run in the bottom of the fifth inning. And then Belt added a pinch hit home run. It was just kind of like Sunday afternoon baseball. The game started, it cruised along, and it went away. And thankfully, the Giants are winning those games instead of losing them now.
That's what's nice, to see the stability of these wins. I know it's Arizona, and they're in last place in the division, but you had the 4-3 win against, you know, Bumgarner, then 4-2 with Cueto. Just kind of a nice standard game. Couple big hits, it's all you need. Bullpen holds it, right? And then you roll right into Monday with a very similar thing with Kevin Gausman. He had a great game, 9 strikeouts and 6 innings pitched. And I myself did not get a chance to watch the game yesterday. We were so busy. I did watch all the highlights. Of course, Darren Ruff with the bases loaded single there, which was great. And I know that you wrote right here that Dick left after fouling a ball off a knee, but it looks like it's a contusion and it's going to be just kind of day-to-day x-rays were negative. So hopefully not too concerning now. But there was an interesting note about Gausman after the game, and they were talking about how he literally packed his stuff. He packed everything because he assumed he was going to be traded. And he said the only downside of this is he had to unpack. He's like, yeah, packing before a trade just makes it so much easier because you just go. And people are like, okay, like, interesting. Huh.
I kind of like that mentality, though, because then he's not surprised if it happens. He doesn't have to sit there packing his stuff being like, what did I do wrong here? How come this team doesn't want me? I wish I could be a part of this future. At least that way, like he says, if he gets the phone call, he just grabs his stuff and goes. I respect that, but I think the way Gausman's pitching, I don't think he's going anywhere. I really think the Giants are going to hold on to him. I mean, he had 9 strikeouts in 6 innings, and he just beautifully worked the fastball-changeup combination. And it's some of the best work I've seen a Giant do since Jason Schmidt used to do that, where he would just absolutely – he'd get you to chase the higher fastballs and get you to swing at those changeups that are just dropping off the table. And that's so funny that he has bags packed, because I think Gausman, he's happy to be a Giant. I'm happy he's still a Giant. He's fun to watch. The guy's a bit of a bulldog out there. He's a competitor. He really bears down. You know, he's somebody I can see being a number 3-4 starter. I could totally see him starting a game 3 in the playoffs behind Cueto and – oh, hell, I mean...
he might be their number 2 at this point.
I mean, yeah, he is at this point.
Cueto, just because he has his stuff, his stuff is so true. Electric. So, you know, he's got good high velocity and everything. And, you know, but he did say he didn't want to have any misconceptions about him packing. It's not that he wanted to leave. It was just like a psychological thing he did.
Right.
And he said, look, the guys really believe in this team. We really believe we can go far. So... and, you know, look, he comes right out and he has a wonderful game after the trade deadline. So that all bodes well, right? It looks good for him.
He had 2 wonderful games after the trade deadline. He was the starting pitcher for the 23-5 game.
Correct.
Yeah. And, I mean, there were moments in that game, too, he had trouble. Yaz bailed him out with one tremendous play in right field. But there were still moments when that game was teetering, when it was only 6-1, and Gausman still was able to bear down and do the things. He looks like a keeper. He could be in the rotation for a couple of years.
Yeah, for sure. All right, well, let's talk about who's not. You want to take it away for the last six games?
Yeah, who's hot? Because we're going to skip who's not later because, I mean, the Giants are just on fire. This offense, I mean, the start of the week, scoring 23 runs. Let's add it up real quick. 6-5, that's 11, 3-4, that's 15, and another 8, that's 23. They scored 23 runs in the first game of the week and then 23 runs in the next five games.
Yeah, 46 runs for six games, not too bad.
That's the ridiculous part about it, right? That's 7.5 runs a game.
Yeah.
Dickerson has a .450 batting average over the last six games, which makes sense. He had those three homers. He drove in six that one day, seven total. But seven of his nine hits this over the last six games were for extra bases. So he had the three home runs, and he had four doubles. And he scored eight runs, which led the team during that time. Mm-hmm. Joey Bart started to hit again. We saw it, like I said, in the 23-5 game. He went 9-for-21 this week. But eight of his nine hits were singles, the only extra base hit being that triple that he hit on the Bumgarner Saturday night game. It's good to see, though, he is being a little more patient at the plate, but he's still chasing. Like, Bum struck him out on a high fastball that a veteran would have known to lay off of because they would have seen that pitch coming. So Bart's still developing, but at least he's connecting right now.
Well, I mean, he's back up to .269 now, which is very respectable for a rookie just coming into the league. I mean, there's nothing wrong with .269. He's not quite Crawford level because we do expect him to be a big powerhouse in a year or two to kind of be the Posey replacement. But, you know, if he's hitting .250 this year and even .250 next year, I think that's fine. That's okay. He needs to up that a little bit. But, again, his strikeouts are what really kill him. I mean, that's basically half of his at-bats end up in a strikeout. If he could reduce just that a little bit, just 20-30%, some of that percentage will turn into hits and his average will just naturally raise. So I'm sure they're all working on that. So,
I mean, his BABIP is probably a little good because, I mean, he hits some rockets at guys, and it really handcuffs them and forces them. It's good to see he didn't get down because he went through that slump after his first weekend of all those doubles. So it was good to see him turn it back around. I'm with you. If he hits .250 for the next 2 years, that's fine. Let the kid develop. I don't mind if he develops at the major league level.
No, I don't either.
Brandon Belt is still hotter than the sun. He batted .429 this past week, and five of his six hits were extra bases. He had two homers and three doubles, and his last homer was Sunday, I believe it was. Or was that yesterday? No, it was Sunday. It was a pinch hit homer. It's like his fifth or sixth pinch hit homer ever. And it's just, he came off the bench and he's like, whatever, I got this. Yeah. You know, I love the Belt bat drop. I really do. And we got to give him credit for being as on fire as he is. He was hitting .500 recently over a 10 game span. And his batting average is at .330 for the season. And as a guy who started off rough because he was coming off injury, I mean, this is the Brandon Belt we've always wanted to see. And I don't know if he's playing for another contract. I don't know if Farhan's looking at him thinking, oh, good, maybe I can trade him in the offseason. Mm-hmm. I just know that Belt has seemed to put a jolt in this lineup because ever since he started hitting, they started winning.
Yeah, and Gabe Kapler is also, if you've noticed, he's adapted his managerial style from the beginning of the year to now. I mean, before it really was exclusively matchups, righty-lefty, that kind of thing. He's starting to go away from that. He will play Belt. I mean, he played Belt against Bumgarner, right? So he is batting Belt because he's the hot hand against lefty pitchers, and he's hitting them really well. He's not always playing Crawford, but he's been playing a little bit more than he did at the beginning of the year, no matter who's out there. So, I mean, it's good to see your manager adapt to the way the team is performing and the way individuals are performing. It's not 100% just by the numbers. It's a feel of the game, too. When a guy's hot, it doesn't matter who he's facing. He's brimming on confidence. He's on a hot streak. Play the hot hand, you know? And I think you're seeing him do that a little bit more. So it's good to see, I think.
I'll give Kapler credit there. That's part of why I've ripped Kapler is I don't feel like his game management, game flow, his sense of the game is there all the time. And he's done really well with the position players. He still has some hiccups with the bullpen. He still trusts Tyler Rogers a little more than I would personally.
Yeah.
It's just an example. But
Frisbee slider.
Yeah, it does seem like he is willing to adapt. And it tells me, too, that as much as we think the front office is intervening at times, that they are giving Cap a little leeway to do the things that he needs to do. I'm sure that it's not like Farhan's like, you better play Belt today because he's hot. Yeah. Because even Sunday, Belt got the day off, and he came in, hit the pinch hit homer. Because his defense is just so much better than Wilmer's, so he's not going to lose out on platoon advantage as long as he's hitting. Yeah, and that's why he stays there. Yaz hit .417 this week. Like, it didn't even feel like Yaz had a great week. Everybody else, we talked about Dickerson, Flores, Solano had a good time this week. Belt, Joey Bart comes back. But Yaz hit .417. He was 10 for 24 on the week. He had a homer and a triple, mm-hmm. So he's still continuing production. And then I want to give Mauricio Dubon some credit. I do. The kid has had a wild ride. But he batted 300 this week with two doubles and a triple, and he just keeps showing market improvement. He will learn from his mistakes. To me, he's an easy result of the DH era because we're not used to having these speedy guys at 8 and 9 in the lineup that can do things and get on base every now and then and kind of cause havoc and add an extra leadoff by. And Doobie has really fallen into that batting ninth role and, you know, punching a few hits every now and then. And then he's getting driven in along with the leadoff guy or the number two hitter by the 3, 4 yeah. and five guys, the big guys in the lineup. So I think that he is getting his extra chances as a result of the designated hitter. And it's good to see him taking the reins because we know it. This kid likes being a Giant. I know he felt really crappy about what happened on Friday night. So
yeah, and he owned it too. So he knows what he did. So
yeah, I mean that's what makes him a good Giant, just right then and there. You know, as long as you don't blame somebody else for your mistakes and you want to learn, you know, everybody's willing to forgive. We're all human. And then I wrote down here, we were doing the notes, who's not. I said skip it. The Giants are 500. They're in the playoff race. They just had one of the best weeks they've ever had. 46 runs in 6 games. I mean, when the hell are we going to see that again? 23 runs, 27 hits in 1 game. When are we ever going to see that again? So everybody.
Well, hopefully next week, but, you know.
They ain't going back to Colorado, though. We'll talk about the upcoming schedule. It's a lot tougher than the Rockies and the Diamondbacks coming up for the Giants. So
very true. So yeah, we had a list of transactions this week. Nothing too earth-shattering. Back on September 1st, they recalled infielder Daniel Robertson from the alternate site, and he's been getting some playing time. He's been looking okay. He doesn't seem particularly good or bad either way. So we'll just see how. That develops. I honestly didn't really know anything about him. He's definitely one of those guys who flew low on the radar. I've never really even heard of him. The option, Duggar on the 5th, back to the alternate site. They activated Austin Slater from the 10-day IL. They recalled Rico Garcia from the alternate site a couple of days ago, along with optioning Andrew Suarez in his place. And then yesterday they released infielder Abiatol Avellino. So he's been kind of bouncing up and down, and they finally released him. So
I think that's the end of the McCutchen trade. I think that's the end of the McCutchen trade.
Yeah, unfortunately, because they had gotten him from the Yankees, and he just never developed into what they kind of had envisioned. So, unfortunately, yeah, some swings and misses, but, you know, it happens.
I'll go back to Robertson for a minute. I like what I see so far from this kid. They showed the side-by-side. He loads and swings just like Justin Turner. It's really eerie. And Zaidi is the one that found Turner. Yeah. So, you know, it's the same thought. Maybe this Robertson can be a good infielder, utility guy. Maybe he could be a second baseman, you know, something like that. And he does seem to hit the ball with some power, but not as much as a Justin Turner.
Not
who turned into power. But who knows? If he uses the same lock and load that Turner uses, maybe one day he could turn into a power hitter and a huge force. But like you said, it's another one of those moves. We just got to see how it shakes out.
Yeah, for sure. All right, well, coming up, they have 2 against Seattle at home. Seattle's currently 19-22, 3rd in the AL West, and they are currently out of the playoffs. But, you know, they're not a bad team, obviously. So important for the Giants to hopefully take both against Seattle, because after that, they're going 4 down to San Diego. And, of course, San Diego's having a very good year this year. 2nd in the NL West, they're 9 games above .500 and currently the 4th seed in the playoffs. So that's gonna be could be a buzzsaw. And so that's one of those series. You go down to San Diego for 4, you want to split, you know.
Yes,
you have to win 3 out of 4, you want to split. And that's why if you take two against Seattle, split against San Diego, you have another 4-2 week. Be great. And yep. Nothing wrong with that. Obviously, if they split everything, it won't be the end of the world. But you got to avoid that losing 3 out of 4 against San Diego. That's what you need to avoid. So.
And San Diego's a buzzsaw. They really are the hot team right now. Yeah. It's funny. On the flip side, just as a quick little note, the Texas Rangers, since they whined about Fernando Tatis swinging and hitting a grand slam on the 3-0 pitch and a blowout, the Texas Rangers have gone 3-17 since.
Has it been that bad?
It's been that bad. And the San Diego Padres, as you said, are 9 games over .500.
Oh, my Lord.
Securely locked into the playoffs at this point. And they could challenge the Dodgers if the Dodgers fall apart, but that's not happening either. They're a fun team to watch, San Diego. If the Giants weren't in the playoff race, I'd kind of pull for the kid brother a little bit.
Yeah.
But since the Giants are in the playoff race, we need to see them beat the Padres a few times, at least be competitive. And then we need to root for the teams on the other side in the East and the Central that are playing the other teams around the Giants in the wild card, because there's no cross division play.
No.
So like seeing where they are in the standings at 7th. So who's below them? It's Philly's above them now. They're on a, but they got to root for Philly against teams like the Marlins now. You know what I mean? They got to root.
No,
for
the it's Cubs true. The Marlins like the are right there at 500. You know, you got other teams that are only a couple games back, right? You got the Mets, the Brewers, 18-21, so they're kind of right on the heels of the Giants. The Rockies, obviously, 20-21. So yeah, I mean, there's no doubt that we need some of these other teams to take care of business in the East and the Central, and of course the Rockies. Are the Giants done with the Rockies, or do they have one more series left?
They're done. The Giants, I believe, shake out Seattle, San Diego, Seattle again, and then who's the other West team? Arizona, LA, San Diego.
Who they're done with LA, Arizona, and Colorado. So it's just the Padres they have left this year.
Yeah,
bringing up the entire schedule here because they only have 18 games left. Which is insane.
Nine. I know home, four of them against nine the Mariners. On the road.
Yeah, the internet is not forgiving today. There we go. Oh, well, so
yeah, might as well say my.
They do have one more. Yeah, so they have 4 games left against the Rockies.
That's my bad.
4-game series at home. So that'll be interesting. In fact, that's their next and last homestand. So they finish with 2 against Seattle, right, tonight and tomorrow, which, by the way, I do have credentials for tomorrow night, so I'll be covering the game at Oracle Park. And then they go on the road for the Padres. We'll bring our next podcast to you probably next Monday. Then 2 on the road in Seattle, then 3 on the road in Oakland. They have 2 off days that following week. And then they wrap up the 2020 season, regular season, with a 7-game homestand, 4 against the Rockies and 3 against the Padres. So, 7 out of their remaining 18 games are against the Padres. And so that's and 4 against the Rockies, and they may factor in the wild card race too. So, I mean, well, they got a lot of control coming up.
It doesn't hurt either. They have an off day next week. This is the stupidest thing. They have 2 off days the rest of the year, and they're next Monday and Thursday. I just don't get it. But, I mean, I do get it because it's 2020. But after the Seattle series, they can come home. Because they have 3 against Oakland, and the Giants can sleep in their own beds for the Oakland series. So conceivably, the Giants get to sleep in their own beds for the final 3, 4, 10 games of the season.
Yeah,
I think it's an advantage. I think sleeping at home is always an advantage. I know I like it in playing as a poker player. I love that I get to go home and sleep in my bed at night. When we used to take trips to other places and I had to go back to a hotel room and I knew I had to worry about checkout the next day and things like that, like that hung over me. And these guys, granted, they don't have to worry about checkout. These guys get to go home and sleep in their own beds, even though they're going on a 3-city trip. It's really only 2 cities.
Right.
So that could work in their favor. But the A's are a good team, as we saw earlier this season. So they definitely got their work cut out for them.
No, they do. They got Seattle's the only under 500 team they're going to play. The Rockies, I just kind of still count as 500 right now. I know they're technically a game under, but by then, who knows where they're going to be. So, not the easiest road, but at least it's not like it was at the beginning of the season. So they just got to catch the Padres, hopefully, when they're sleeping. So, all right. Well, I think that's going to do it for episode 206 of the TortureCast. You can follow us collectively on Twitter at TortureCast or like us on Facebook where we share everything there. Visit our website at torchcast.com. We're going to post this video on YouTube and on our website. So if you always listen to the audio podcast, you can take a look at our ugly mugs if you'd like. Or if not, if that is sensitive to, you know, sensitive stomachs, we understand. but it's always there to check it out. You can follow us individually, myself at ChadK21. Of course, Eric at 2OutHits with the number 2. And that's about it. So, yeah, we got 3 weeks left of the regular season. We probably got, you know, 3 more regular season podcasts, and hopefully we're doing playoff baseball, baby.
We will be. We'll be doing a playoff this year. I feel that this offense is too good.
Yeah, yeah. No, everything's looking really good. So it could be our first playoff experience since 2016. Now, that may not sound like a long time for a lot of teams, kind of long for Giants, but it is another even year, and in a crazy pandemic and crazy world, why not? Just going as a number 8 seed, number 7 seed, or maybe even better, and just wreak havoc. So we look forward to the next 18 games. But until then, we'll see you next week for episode 207. A-boom.
Believing.
A big thank you to everybody for listening to the TortureCast, the podcast by and for fans of the San Francisco Giants. Follow us on Twitter at TortureCast. You can also like us on Facebook or check out our blog at torturecast.com. I also want to say thank you to Ashcon and Bailey for letting us use their song Feeling Like a Giant for our intro. For Ben Lee and Chad King, my name is Willie Dills saying, we'll see you next time.